What the Health with George Bertineau on FUBAR Radio.
Good morning and welcome to What the Health with me, George Bertineau. I'm an online coach helping everyday people make everyday better decisions. I have a BSc in sports rehabilitation and I previously worked in football for 5 years. And I've been a health and fitness expert for over a decade. And I'm here to talk to you about the world of health and fitness, supporting you through and navigate through a minefield of information on the internet and a world full of rubbish and deception. Each week I'll be joined by a range of guests to dissect the latest fitness trends, separating facts from myths, and advising you on achieving your health goals in the correct and healthiest way possible. I'm going to be joined today by Marvin Sordell, professional footballer, Jonathan Collins from Mind in Sport, and Anne Hagam, who is an Ayurvedic practitioner and yoga teacher. But this week on Mythbusters, we're going to be starting with Tommy Winkler, aka the Food Guy. Tommy, hello, good morning. How are you?
Good. Thanks for having me on. I'm excited.
Thanks so much for coming in. I really appreciate it. How was the journey in?
Oh, it was good. Yeah, a bit cold weather now. Our week started off hot. And I heard it's the hottest month of April since like 1910 here in London.
Yeah, I mean, we've had some nice heat, but proper dip in weather.
Oh, yeah.
Right, let's dive straight into it, okay?
Let's do it.
How did you get into creating food content?
It was pretty random. It all started on TikTok, of course. Created content prior, YouTube. Mm-hmm. Did some live streaming on Twitch. But on TikTok, I was just creating relatable, comedic bits, sketches type content. And then ran out of video ideas, created a what I eat in the day, first bite of each food item I ate throughout the day, and it blew up. I mean, 500,000 views.
Nice.
And I was like, holy crap, like, what is up with this video? Let me create another one. Create another one the next day. Same performance, if not better.
Cool.
And people were just commenting, weirdly, I just like watching this guy eat.
Yeah. Okay, cool. That's really interesting. I mean, we all need food, right?
Right, exactly.
So, I mean, I've heard a thing that food content is pretty ingestible, pun intended. And it's, you know, it's just so easy to watch and enjoy. So it sounds like you've caught onto something and you've kind of just ridden that wave and you keep working on it now, I'm guessing.
Yeah. Yeah, just innovated off of that and it's gotten me and my fan base to where we are today, and I couldn't be more grateful.
Amazing, man. Right, so you travel the world a lot. What type of cuisine is your favorite?
It's a really, really tough question. I had a blast in Japan.
I bet.
I mean, they are just, their craft, they're just a master at it, especially when it comes to food. They're so meticulous and specific about the just more than just a presentation, but the taste, of course. So Japan, that cuisine was unreal, and Italy. I love my carbs.
Okay.
Pasta, pizza.
Carby Barbie or Carby Ken, yeah?
Yeah.
Okay, nice. what country has the weirdest foods that you've been to? Because obviously, if you're traveling the world, I'm sure you've had some interesting delicacies.
The Philippines.
Was
very unique. A specific delicacy there is the balut egg.
The balut egg?
Yeah, it is essentially a duck embryo.
Okay.
So you're pretty much cracking open this egg, and it's the bird is there in whole.
Really?
It's very visual. The taste of it actually isn't anything crazy. It's just pretty salty. But
tastes like chicken?
Tastes like chicken, not quite. More like the yolk of an egg, just a standard egg.
Yeah.
But you can see the beak, the feathers of this duck embryo. And that was very unique. And other than that, in the Philippines, they like to add chicken oil onto their like rice and chicken. So that was very unique. Just a very, very different cuisine that I've tried.
It sounds like it. That's cool. I mean, I've heard lots of things about the Philippines, so that's super interesting. Right, so you're in the UK for a short period of time. Do you have a favorite British dish?
Ooh. You know, I just did my first ever Sunday roast.
Okay. Well, that was going to be something I wanted to ask you. So, yeah, go for it. What did you go for? Chicken, lamb?
The beef.
You know, beef.
The beef roast. Choice. Okay. Very good.
Whereabouts anywhere in particular?
That was at the Ned.
Oh, you went to the Ned. So, great choice.
Very great spoiled choice. With that one for it being my first.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Have you tried jellied eels before?
Jellied eels?
That's an English delicacy. Baked beans, I'm assuming?
Yes, baked
yes,
beans.
Yes, you had baked beans, fish and chips, that kind of...
Beans and tuna.
Yeah. Okay, nice. So how do you balance keeping fit and making content like you do?
Yeah,
because the things you're going to end up eating are quite calorifically dense at times.
They can be.
You know.
Yeah, and I love talking about this because in my videos on my main page, I don't get into this as much because people just care to see me consume and
over-consume. They want to see you consume and not expend.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. But I do have a second page called Tommy Winkler Fitness.
Okay.
And that's where I can dive deeper into what it looks like behind the scenes and get to be more transparent with my audience, which it just is hours of working out. And I have a good team behind me that motivates me, which is also from my girlfriend, Jess. Helps me with everything.
Big up, Jess.
Yes, big up, Jess. And helps me just keep track of my day-to-day life. And the fact that I've been able to create this as my main job gives me the time and the freedom to work out and try my best to, counter the calories that are coming in.
Yeah. Okay, so what would a normal day of balance look like to you?
Yeah.
Because I know some food creators who might show that they eat lots of food, mm-hmm. but they don't. They have a small portion of it, and then it's like, oh, that was really tasty. You don't actually see them finish the food, or maybe their partner, or they're with other people behind the scenes. But how would it look for you? Because obviously, if you say you're eating all these calories, you can't really out-train a pork diet. But if you keep an eye on certain things, you can balance it out.
Yeah. One thing that I want people to know, and if you're on a fitness journey yourself, is prioritize being active, prioritize working out, prioritize fitness. I couldn't make that more clear. That's what I do every single day on my day-to-day is pretty much fitting my schedule, fitting my content, whatever I planned around working out.
Yeah.
Because that is very, very important, especially to what I do. But I think everyone on a day-to-day basis really should be working out. So day-to-day is wake up, hit a workout, normally some morning cardio.
Fasted, not fasted? You have
fasted.
Yeah, okay, you do fasted.
Yeah, do it fasted. It depends on the challenge that I have that day, which I have kind of steered away from doing daily. I did daily food challenges for about a year, and a half.
Yeah.
And then kind of started innovating because I realized the longevity of this is not going to get too far. Not just my physical health was deteriorating, mental health.
Yeah, I bet. Like some
was a big part of it. I just felt like crap.
Yeah, I bet. I bet after that, all those carbs and all those calories, you're just there and you're crashing the whole time.
Yeah,
mentally and physically, and you're hitting. I bet you were snoozing quite a lot, sleeping a lot. Were you? I mean,
the sleep wasn't the best.
Oh yeah, it was probably all over the place. But were you napping during the day because of it and all the calories, food comas, things like that?
Food comas for sure. Maybe TMI. A lot of time spent in the bathroom.
Yeah, I bet.
Because
some hot foods
it doesn't feel good. Hot foods, those are the worst. The spicy foods kind of put me out of it, out of any challenge that I've done.
I bet.
And after working out, film part of my food video, whether that's eating foods that are in the shape of a square for the whole day.
Okay. That's quite cool.
Yeah, that's quite cool. And
that's actually really interesting. Okay.
For those types of videos, what I've learned to stay on track with my fitness goals is portion control.
Yes.
Is huge.
Yeah. Okay.
And balance, of course. Mm-hmm. But when I first started, I would be doing eating McDonald's for the whole day. Mm. But I would get a 10, 20-piece nugget.
Yeah.
Now it's like if I were to eat McDonald's for the whole day, just get a 4-piece nugget.
Yeah, okay.
Like, it kind of shows in the videos, because I grew up with the mentality from my parents. I was a part of the finish your plate club.
I mean, I think lots of families, there's one or the other, isn't it? It's you have to finish your plate.
Finish your plate.
Or it's like, you know, you're not forced to finish your plate.
Exactly.
One or the other, yeah, okay.
So that's just... came to me personally in the challenges. It was a lot more than content.
Yes.
With the food, it was more like, okay, let's try and eat Taco Bell for the whole day and see how that affects me in my training.
Okay.
So it was more of just like challenging myself. Mm. I mean, I feel like a lot of people have a perspective on social media creators.
Yeah.
Just because they see such little bits of the lifestyle that we live.
It's a fraction, right?
Uh-huh.
They see a fraction of your day.
They see a fraction of it, and a lot of people don't think it's a whole lot of work, and I just want people to know that I am putting in the work.
Mm.
You know, like me specifically, I can't speak for anyone else, but I will make things hard on myself. I am very productive person. It's just my natural lifestyle. So whatever effort or work I put into something, I'm going 100% in, and I'm making it a challenge for myself.
I think with what you do as well is if you're not dedicated and you aren't training regularly and
yes.
then you are eating these calories. I look at the gentleman who did Man versus Fat.
Yeah.
Was it Man versus Fat? No, Man versus Food. Man versus Food.
Yeah.
That gentleman put on loads and loads and loads of weight, and then he lost loads. I don't know how he did it, whatever he did, but I think he was like the first kind of person to be doing that, but that was TV based.
Yeah.
And obviously what you do, there's a big indication that, you know, if you eat too much for too long over long periods of time, it is going to rapidly damage your health, which like you said, it did. So it sounds like you've got a really good balance.
Yeah.
I mean, anything else that you wanted to add to your day? Obviously we've only briefly touched on the start.
At the moment, I've been able to find a balance. I am young, and I believe, yes, I admit metabolism plays a factor in it, which differs from each individual out there. So I am blessed that what I've been able to consume doesn't reflect as much. And also my videos, too, are chest up. So when I am eating shirtless, you don't see where I'm holding fat chest up. I don't hold fat in my face as much. My shoulders, it's a lot of like in the love handles, the legs, the glutes.
Okay.
That's where I hold most of my fat. So I think
all about angles.
It's all about angles.
Yeah.
It really is. So people got to know it's all about angles, lighting. Back to my day. After filming, so after the workout, filming, then after consuming, I need a little bit of a rest.
Mm-hmm.
But then it kind of just goes back into being active, cardio. I couldn't talk about how crucial cardio is.
So would you
in this.
More walking or is it more jogging?
Right now I am training for a marathon.
Oh, nice. So okay.
It's been a lot of running.
Yeah, I bet.
But incline treadmill walk, the Stairmaster, Stairstepper.
Stairway to Hell.
Stairway to Hell. Those are crucial. And then just putting in, I've been doing a lot of like power lifting lately. So,
I mean, you got a lot of food in you. You're going to get super strong, but your gains have been fantastic as
Oh my goodness. Yeah. The clarity I have in the gym when I'm going for a PR has been, been quite good with the amount of fuel that I'm giving myself.
all the sugar carbs. We love that.
Yep.
Okay.
And just work out at least twice a day, just kind of separating it based off my food consumption. But that two times a day it's a few hours of working out.
It's also neurologically taxing as well.
Yeah.
You think about it, you're spending a lot of time masticating, which is obviously chewing and eating and trying to ingest this food. Mm-hmm. And then you've got to think about how long it takes to digest. And it's like, well, you can't train on a full stomach. And so you're juggling a lot. I bet your days are quite long as well.
They can
be. Up early to train early and then finishing late because you've got this
planning.
Food and you're planning and everything.
Yeah.
So, okay.
I'm very analytical and strategic and numerical. Before the food content, I was huge into fitness and nutrition just before the unhealthy eating habits. But that kind of got me into counting calories on a healthy basis. So I can definitely keep track of what's going in and what's going out, but also to a certain extent where I don't want to, I've been caught in a cycle of over obsessing on counting calories.
Yeah.
And that is a path that don't necessarily want to go down just because mentally you can really beat yourself up.
That you can. You can get obsessive. I mean, we can all get obsessive with certain things. Sadly, Tommy, that's all we're going to have time for.
Yeah.
Where can the listeners find you on socials? Do you have a website? Where can people find you? So you mentioned TikTok, but...
Yeah, TikTok, Instagram, YouTube, Snapchat, Facebook at Tommy Winkler or search The Food Guy.
Amazing. Well, Tommy, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
Enjoy the rest of Britain and the UK, and I'll speak to you soon.
I appreciate it.
Thank you so much. Right, guys, coming up after this short break, I'll be joined by Marvin Sordell, professional footballer, and Jonathan Collinge from Mind in Sport.
What the hell? Health with Georges Bertineau on FUBAR Radio.
FUBAR Radio. That Money Show with Gabriel Nussbaum on FUBAR Radio.
Let's go back to the beginning. A mortgage advisor. What does a mortgage advisor do?
So, the main purpose of a mortgage advisor is to help you to achieve the best possible mortgage solution on time and first time. Typically, in the modern day, it's somebody who's going to hold your hand through the full home buying process, liaising with solicitors, estate agents, helping with insurance, and yeah, being in your corner on your team to make sure you achieve that goal.
You're listening to FUBAR Radio.
Download our app now to listen to your favourite shows, such as Access All Areas, Politics Uncensored, and The Dating Show. You can also download and catch up on previous episodes of all FUBAR shows, including our box sets. Plus, you can get in touch directly from within the app.
Just search for FUBAR Radio on the Apple and Google App Stores.
Yay! The FUBAR Radio app. Get it today.
Get it today.
It's the sound of your mates alive. It's getting to more gigs this year and the next. It's the sound of saying, I got you, mate. It's the sound of mates enjoying even more of this. It's the sound of mates getting home instead of here. Click your seatbelt, because you're twice as likely to be killed or seriously injured if you don't think.
When you notice something wrong, it tends to grow and eventually take over, to the point you can't really think of anything else. If something in your body doesn't feel right, the thought it could be cancer can play on your mind. Tests could put your mind at rest. Finding out sooner is always better. Your NHS wants to see you. Contact your GP practice.
Access All Areas with Bobby Norris.
We are joined by Miss Safia. If I could produce you a salt, what is he like on paper? Sound like we're on Love Island.
Okay, on paper, my type has to have a good soul, yeah, good purpose and calm energy. I'm in my energy era where you've just got to come in and make me happy. I don't need you for anything. I wanna find happiness and I need him to be kind.
Couple Goals with Sophie Kasai and Jordan Brooke.
Moira Higgins.
That's a Geordie Shaw thing.
Has scrubbed a shitty toilet with her ex-boyfriend's toothbrush. Why did she do this?
He's obviously done something very bad.
Do we know who he is? Does anybody know who he is?
No, but I mean, I don't think he'd want to know who he is.
No.
I think he'd probably go and hide in now, whoever that is.
Mate, if you're listening to this, go and buy a new toothbrush because you've still got the same one.
Get yourself to Turkey and get yourself some veneers because I can't imagine them teeth are going to last much longer.
No.
What the hell? With Georges Bertineau, exclusively on FUBAR Radio.
This is What the Health on FUBAR Radio with me, Georges Bertineau. I'm now joined by Marvin Sordell, professional footballer, and Jonathan Collins from Mind in Sport. Gentlemen, good morning. How are you both?
Good, thank you. How are you?
Good, thank you very much for asking. Thank you so much for joining us, by the way. Much appreciated. We're going to jump straight into the questions. So, Jonathan, can you start by telling us more about the Mad Headlines campaign?
Yes. So, the Mad Headlines is one of those things, isn't it? It's grabbing attention. Mm-hmm. So, the campaign is about just talking about the kind of language that's being used in the sports media at the moment, and to address how people feel that actually affects people with some mental health issues. So when we start to talk about the word mad, crazy, insane, we're thinking about the end user in the sense of how they feel when they are suffering from some mental health issues.
Okay, and I've got here that 1 in 20 words and 11% of headlines in sports coverage use those terms, like crazy, insane, mental, and these obviously negatively impact 91% of people living with mental health or mental illnesses, correct? Is that?
Correct.
Yeah? Okay. Wow, that's extremely high numbers considering, really, isn't it? As an individual, I don't obviously see that side of things, but this is what you guys work on. So, Marvin, why did you want to get involved with this?
I think campaigns like this are important because, you know, language is such an important part of impacting society, impacting people and people's lives, of course, in so many different ways. And I think having the ability to educate people and give them an understanding as to why they are, I think, is, you know, incredibly important, as well as actually trying to support the people who are actually being affected by these.
Yeah, I mean, education is key, right? So you've been a professional. Do you still play, correct?
Not professionally, no.
No, okay. So, okay. Because I saw you, obviously, in Ballers League, so I was just, you know, assuming you're still enjoying that. So, I mean, yeah, education is key, right? And with the... Do you feel that this is the kind of stuff that you guys can potentially push into academies? Or... is education happening in academies for them to understand and kind of be aware of this?
I think it's much broader than just academies. I think football's obviously such an industry and society in this country that has such wide influence. Mm-hmm. But I think this is much bigger than just football. And I think we probably all very much, you know, agree on that, I'm sure, that if this is a conversation that we can have in society and using sport and football as a vehicle to get that message across and out there is going to be positive on a much bigger scale than if we just limited it to just speaking to young people in football academies. You know?
Yeah, true. Okay. And Jonathan, discussions around mental health have become like far more prominent recently, haven't they? Why do you think the media still resort to using damaging language and words like this?
I think, George, you've mentioned it. It is about education. I think one of the things that is happening is that we're not trying to point any fingers at anybody. What we are trying to do is just educate the fact that, you know, words do matter, mm-hmm. and it's about the education going forward that we want to try to implement in that way. And like I said, I think sometimes the it grabs the headlines in that way, using mad, crazy, you know, insane in that way. And we're not exempt from that. We've, you know, looked into the mirror and said, you know, we personally use those things, but we're trying to be better. So we're trying to educate ourselves in that way, to be better in that way, and trying to find a substitute word maybe to show our emotion. And sometimes these words come out because we can't find the right word, so we use them because it's just been a part of our day-to-day activities that we got used to. But thinking about that individual who may be suffering from some mental illness at that particular time, how it affects them as an individual, that may set them back and put barriers up in the sense of going to a sport or doing something. Footballers themselves hear it. You know, are we putting barriers in front of those people that actually need our support and need our help?
You mentioned something a minute ago about emotion. Do you think that sometimes people are maybe speaking from emotion and that's why they're using these words? Because, you know, there are lots of people out there who aren't very well thought through and they do just say what the first thing they're saying. Do you think that's the problem? That's the damaging part. People are potentially being, you know, emotional, or do you find that maybe people are just trying to be, there's an element of, like you said, grabbing headlines and being maybe a little bit vindictive with it to try and hurt people?
Personally, I don't think people are deliberately going out to hurt somebody if they knew those words were going to be used in that context. I think the educational side of doing that is just a part and parcel of it. Just talking about it and being open about it and having this opportunity to share with listeners in that way, how, you know, how it may affect them as a person in that way. So I don't deliberately think that people use it. I think it is about grabbing headlines. And if some people are doing that, well, then, you know, it's about the experience that they're going through, and they may go through, or they may know even their friends or family may be going through certain issues, and you wouldn't want to hurt them.
No, of course not. Yeah.
In that way. So I think it does highlight the fact that nobody's perfect, and we're not trying to say that is, but it, for the long-term goals, it is about, for us, the educational side of things.
Okay. Marvin, how much can headlines like the ones we're discussing, you know, affect you as a player and as a person?
I mean, a lot. You know, I think we've probably seen a lot of instances throughout the years, especially recently over the last few years, with media being such a prevalent thing, social media as well, and it being just a constant in people's lives. And, you know, I think these words can, you know, have compounding impact, I think, over time, the world, not necessarily just when it's one or two, but I think over time they may have a big impact. So I think, you know, like we've just mentioned it like quite often, I think education is very key. I don't think it necessarily always comes from a place of wanting to cause harm, or if that's the intention. But I think understanding and allowing people to understand that that these kind of words and these articles and these headlines can cause impact. I think that's the most important thing at this point.
Yeah, okay. And I totally see that, and I totally understand. I mean, you know, words can, you know, linger in people's minds and cause them a lot more harm than anything else. You know, sometimes people, you know, we're not worried about the physical harm, it's the mental impact that it has on people. Jonathan, what impact do these headlines have on younger fans? Do you think that they're seeing this and they're potentially, you know, maybe this goes back to the education part, but do you think younger fans are seeing these headlines and thinking it's acceptable to use words like this?
It's a good question. I don't think they think it through in that way, because they're just hearing it all the time.
It's ingesting information
kind of thing that goes on.
Yeah.
So again, I think it comes back to their own interpretation of that. And if they're told that may be hurting somebody, maybe that younger generation may be not using those words, they're trying to find a substitute word out there. But if they keep hearing it, they keep seeing it, to sensationalise all these things about, you know, a pass or a tackle, you know, that was a hard tackle. No, that was an insane tackle. It's the wordings that potentially are those most hurtful. So again, we come back to the word education. We you know, it's about how we look forward to actually dealing with these issues that are at the moment grabbing the headlines in that way. So education is again a big part of what we do at Sporting Mind, and we try to educate young people in the sense of how they're feeling and their emotional needs at particular moments of the time that they have the experience that it's not all bad, but also we can look towards the future and changing the vocabulary of people.
Okay. And Marvin, do you think abuse in football has got worse over the past few years?
I think probably in short, it is more visible. I think, I don't know if it's necessarily gotten worse. I think football players and the football industry is a lot more accessible than it probably ever has been, you know, because of media, because of social media, because of a lot of, you know, podcast discussions that are just constantly happening. And I think because of that, I think we see and hear a lot. Whether it's worse is another thing. I don't necessarily know if that's the case or not, but I think it's definitely a lot more visible for sure.
Yeah. Okay. And how much does this have to do with, do you think it's all to do with the media then? Because it's also easily accessible now. There's more podcasts. People are talking openly about it. You know, maybe before we weren't, you know, there are documentaries now on actual conversations in changing rooms. Like, maybe, you know, do conversations like this happen in changing rooms, or are they all completely ignored? I mean, I've worked in football, so I kind of have an understanding. But, you know, from your point of view, do you find that conversations like these,
conversations around mental health?
Yeah.
Or what?
Yeah, so conversations about mental health, yeah.
Happen, yeah, for sure. You know, I think we're all part of the media in some form of way because of social media. You know, every single person in a sense is a reporter or a journalist because they have an opinion that they can report to a public and to an audience, regardless of whatever that size may be. So we all are all part of it. So it is all media, not in necessarily the traditional sense, but we are all part of the media in that way. So we do also carry a responsibility in what we say, how we say it, who we say it to, and the manner in which we do so. And, you know, football is just, like I say, it's such a big part of society where people love it. so much and are very emotionally invested in it. So, of course, there's going to be, you know, with all of the positive emotions that are there, there's going to be negative emotion too. And, you know, unfortunately, I think sometimes people do often cross the line in terms of what's said and the how it's delivered, even if it doesn't necessarily have the strongest intent to harm someone. But, you know, I think that's why, you know, we keep coming back to education is such an important thing, because it is the direction that we want to head in as opposed to where we're currently at. You know, of course, there's a lot that needs to be done. There's a long way to go. But if you look back over the, you know, past couple of decades in football, this would never even have been thought of to be a discussion. Mm-hmm. So the fact that we're discussing it means that we're moving in the right direction. And hopefully in another 10, 15, 20 years, we've moved on much further again.
Yeah, leaps and bounds. Yeah, well, I mean, Jonathan, what are you hoping to achieve, you know, with this campaign then? Like, are you hoping to, you know, flourish and come on leaps and bounds? What are you looking to kind of to nail down?
I think it's raising awareness. Is the big key for us. It's about saying that there's things that can help, making sure that people feel that they are in a safe space in that way. It's time for change, because again, I think it's like most things, you know, you have to start with your first step. If you're going to run a marathon, you'll be trained, but your first step is the most important.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I think to put this on the agenda of words matter, they can hurt. They can also, you know, the right words can encourage. So for us, you know, the whole idea of just the awareness piece around that is a part of the education that we'll all go through.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And Marvin, what would you like to see done about this issue? You know, should there be more regulations around the language the media can use, or maybe in football or you know, in other sports? What do you think? Yeah, what do you think?
I don't necessarily think restricting language is a good idea, personally. I think, again, just to hammer down the point, I think it's educating people to understand, like, why what they say potentially matter, because, you know, when you place certain words in, you know, the language that we have is so amazing for so many different reasons, but also can be very bad for so many different reasons. And if you place words together in whatever way, it can be a very positive thing or a bit very negative thing. And I think it's understanding, you know, the difference between both and why it can be harmful, because, you know, if we look back through history, there's a lot of words that we understand now are very harmful, and if you take it in the isolation, they may not seem so, but we understand in within a certain realm of context that they can be and they are very harmful. And I think that's the journey that we're on at the moment, is just understanding, like, some different words and some different phrases in the context of what we're talking about can be harmful. And it's just understanding, not necessarily to just not use those words, but when and where that you should or shouldn't.
Okay. I mean, last question, Jonathan. Can you tell us more about Sport in Mind and how you're helping, you know, improve people's mental well-being?
Yeah, well, I mean, Sport in Mind, it started in 2010. And what it is, we are the largest sports mental health charity. We have supported over 31,000 people already through access to free sport. Our partnership is with the NHS, so we're very proud to be having such a great collaboration with them.
Mm-hmm.
We operate in over 160 different locations.
Wow.
From Reading, going down into Devon and Cornwall, and over to the side into Kent. And our passion is actually sport, mm-hmm. but even more so, it's to help people with mental health issues.
Okay. Well, gents, thank you so much for your time today. Where can people find you on social media? Do you have a website?
Yes, we do have a website. You can go onto sportinmind.org. All the information is on there. I mean, again, what we are trying to do is we are trying to get people to sign up to the pledge, which mm-hmm. is there about the MAD campaign. They can read all about it on there. And we give support for those people who do sign up with a guidance book so that people know what it's all about and what we're trying to do. So we encourage people to use their platforms to talk about it and to share that words matter.
Amazing stuff. And Marvin, anywhere that people can find you on socials?
My socials are just my name. I don't know if I post anything that interesting for people to want to follow me.
Okay. Now, right, well, I think. Gents, thank you so much for your time. You have a great rest of your day. I appreciate it. Take care.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Bye-bye. Right, guys, coming up after this, I'm going to be joined by Anna Hagam, who is an Ayurvedic practitioner and yoga teacher.
FUBAR Radio.
Death, a funny business on FUBAR Radio with Becky Briggs and Natasha Spencer-Levy.
The lovely Matt Phipps.
Hello. The thing that surprised me most was how much joy I took in being, like, making people feel really uncomfortable. It's so
Amen.
Good. So good.
Your mum jokes change completely.
My friend the other day, she was like, how tall is your mum? And I was like, oh, she's 6 feet under. Yeah, they did not know what to do with that. Yeah. And then you let it hang in the air.
Yeah.
You're listening to FUBAR Radio. Download our app now to listen to your favourite shows, such as Access All Areas, Politics Uncensored, and The Dating Show. You can also download and catch up on previous episodes of all FUBAR shows, including our box sets. Plus, you can get in touch directly from within the app.
Just search for FUBAR Radio on the Apple and Google App Stores.
Yay! The FUBAR Radio app. Get it today.
Get it today.
I was fine on this beach the other day. I didn't know the time of high tide changes, and I had no idea it could come in so fast. So I'm finding out the hard way. From this fella, the Coast Guard, who dropped in to get me out.
Ready!
Before you go to the coast, check the tide times online. In an emergency, call 999 and ask for the Coast Guard.
Some companies try to reel people in by promising quick cash if you pay them to claim work expenses. But think twice before taking the bait, because they might just want to land a commission, and it turns out you aren't eligible to claim anything. You'll have to pay HMRC back, and it's unlikely the company will refund any fees. So don't get caught out. Check if you're eligible and make a claim with HMRC for free online. Just search Don't Get Caught Out.
Politics Uncensored.
We kind of act like COVID didn't happen. Well, do you think it's had a lasting impact, at least on that young generation that experienced it?
The legacy of it in schools, you see the legacy of it in people's mental health. We're seeing the legacy of it even in public services, even in hotels, hospitality. Everything was stripped back to the bone, and the UK did not have the resilience to recover. So I think we are still definitely living in a post-COVID society where nothing really works as well as it did. If you think things were damaged by Brexit, things were double damaged by COVID.
Pulse of the Nation with Andrew White on FUBAR Radio.
Danny Harmer, hello.
Thank you, what an introduction.
I heard in an interview, this may no longer be the case, but in 2020 you said you'd never actually read the original Tracy Beaker.
I've still never read it, and I'm gonna go down with this ship, and quite frankly, I shall never read it. I've got this far in life. And do you know what? I think it's kind of, in a weird way, I think it helped me get the part, because I had no idea of this character apart from the character that I made her.
Keeping fitness fun. What the Health with Georges Bertineau.
This is What the Health on FUBAR Radio with me, Georges Bertineau. Joining me now is Anne Hagam, who is an Ayurvedic practitioner and yoga teacher. Anne, hello, how are you?
Hey, George, I'm great today, thanks. How are you doing?
I'm good, thank you very much for asking. Did I pronounce that all correctly? Ayurvedic? Is it?
For me, yeah, good enough.
Okay, good enough. Well, as long as it's good enough for you, it's good enough for me. Right. What exactly is Ayurveda, and how did you first get into it?
Translates to be the science of life. It's a traditional Indian herbal medicine, so it comes from the Indian subcontinent and is about 5,000-ish years old. And so it translates to mean the science of life, and it really is a truly holistic science that really considers the human in its all its interactions with the environment, the mind, the body, and the soul.
Oh, okay. And how did you first get into it?
So I did a first university degree, management with German, and I realized that I wasn't really going to be satisfied with that. And it was pre-internet days, so pre-algorithm days, where you could find all sorts of random stuff online. Mm-hmm. So going back about 20, 25 years ago, and I came across this course in Ayurveda, and it just sparked some interest. And I went to the college in London and absolutely fell in love. It's very logic driven, and I'm a pretty logic driven individual, and I absolutely loved it, fell in love, and did a 6-year degree program, finished with a master's from Middlesex University, and just lived and breathed it ever since.
Wow, that's actually really fascinating. Okay, so you mentioned that it's over 5,000 years old, correct?
Correct.
So why do you think it stood the test of time?
I think, like I just said, with the logic driven, it's very logic driven. So it really stands in its own right. It really interacts with the environment. So it's seeking to create balance within the human, within their environment. And humans, in essence, haven't really changed that much over the millennia. Mm-hmm. And our environment, okay, sure, our environment factors are really quite different today in the 21st century. But over the years, in essence, we're all looking for kind of the same things. We have to eat to stay alive, and we have to breathe to stay alive. Mm-hmm. And to healthier well environment, so counteracting viruses, counteracting bacteria, the strength of the gut and gut health is really, really profound in Ayurveda. We kind of sort of really understand the microbiome really deeply, and things like that. There's a lot of things that being unpacked in science today that are explaining the things that Ayurveda has had intrinsic and part of at the heart of the science for many, many years. Really? And particularly considering mental health and the interaction between what we think and how our body then actually functions.
Wow, that's you've sparked my interest for this. I'm really fascinated by this, actually. Okay, so you mentioned balance, and obviously you mentioned that it covers everything or lots of things that are kind of now all of a sudden becoming science-based and coming to the forefront of, you know, the media. What are the key problems people tend to come to you about?
So I tend to see a lot of people that come with kind of syndrome type things. So things that people go to their doctors with generally, and there's doctors can be great for certain things. And then for other things, their toolbox in some ways isn't quite as broad as it could be. Mm-hmm. So they'll go with kind of symptomatic problems, and sometimes those symptomatic problems will be addressed and sometimes not so much. And at the end of the day, the patient is still sitting there experiencing maybe pain, experiencing respiratory problems that are ongoing, experiencing reproductive system problems, digestive problems. And the patient often understands that maybe there's something broader going on for them, and maybe there's something that they can really start to do for themselves that might help them. So then quite often they'll then find their way to me. That's not always the case. Sometimes mm-hmm. It is people are just interested in having better health, and particularly these days in longevity and prevention of illnesses, and they just might want to optimize their health. So they might just come for that optimization. But yeah, either which way, they tend to find their way to me either through word of mouth. I do huge amount through word of mouth, mm-hmm. or through the internet.
So potentially like an old school way of biohacking, or like the original way of doing it, potentially.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah,
it is, right? It's the way without modern medicine.
Pretty on it.
Yeah, okay. What does an Ayurvedic yoga session look like?
So yeah, in Ayurveda, we tend to use a lot of different media, different tools to help people. So some of the tools might be herbal-based, might be food-related, treatment-based. And then we do some things that are more lifestyle-related. And I guess yoga or Ayurvedic yoga would come into that. Yoga and Ayurveda are actually sister sciences.
Okay.
But if we took a more Ayurvedic approach in yoga, what we'd be looking to do is bring balance. In Ayurveda, generally, we're always looking to try and bring balance and harmony, regulation back to the system. So if the system is dysregulated, we want to regulate it. So okay. Using yoga, particularly an Ayurvedic approach, we can help to bring some of that harmony back. So some of the focus will be particularly on meditation, particularly on breathing, because mm-hmm. the breathing is like a hack into the nervous system. Mm-hmm. And we can do a lot to regulate the nervous system through working with the vagus nerve, through different exercises and different breathing techniques. So that's kind of one way that there's a specific focus. And the other way is we're always looking to bring balance in relation to the environment. So if the person is super stressed, has been running around at 100 miles per hour, when they come in for a session, really what we're looking to do is then calm that nervous system, not ramp it up more. So rather than doing a hot flow vinyasa type yoga, mm-hmm. we would be looking at like a cooling, more sort of yin yoga, okay. I guess, in a way. Hopefully might explain it to our listeners here today.
Okay. I mean, obviously I know about yoga, but they do sound fairly different. But like you said, they're sisters. So it's like, okay. Interesting. I mean, yeah, really, really interesting stuff. Quickly going back on to what we were talking about with doctors and GPs and stuff. Yeah. Do you feel that people are tending to look for a cure rather than preventing things? You know, why do you think that is?
When we're in, want alleviation, you know, if we've got a burning, throbbing elbow, you know, we want someone to help with that. And in Ayurveda, we do help manage those kind of more immediate acute symptoms. In Ayurveda, what we also really look at is prevention and long-term prevention. So we really understand a disease pathway.
Okay.
And we understand that is often very much a disease in 4 or 5 years' time is born out of how we're taking care of ourselves today.
Mm-hmm.
So, we're really big on prevention. We're big on boosting the digestive system so it's functioning optimally. We really are into stress management. In a way, that's kind of what drew me into Ayurveda in the beginning stages. If we can manage our stress properly, it can take pressure ultimately long term off the cardiovascular system and prevent hopefully cardiovascular unnecessary events. We're all going to die of something one day, but
we will.
We want as long here and as healthily here as possible. There's an argument these days that we've really in many ways with medicine really got that longevity, but that quality of life maybe could be better. So in Ayurveda, that's something that we can do is we really look at promoting that quality of life.
Okay. And I'm assuming, well, I'm not assuming, but you've recently released a cookbook, right?
Mm-hmm.
So assuming this is going to go hand in hand with, like you said, your gut health, your respiratory side of things. Can you tell us more about this cookbook?
Yeah. So my main work is I see clients on a one-to-one basis. And for years, I've been giving various instructions over what to eat and different herbal remedies and things. And people kept asking me for a book. So I finally got round to it and produced this amazing book called The Ayurveda Kitchen. And it has 80 different vegetarian recipes in it. And it also has a small section of like a kitchen pharmacy. of things that, that you can make at home to help with some of as these kind of home remedies. And throughout the book, there's a lot of general information that I've fed and flowed through the book. So it's kind of a great book for picking up, getting something out of it, reading it for a while, putting it back down, getting it back out again. That's certainly how a lot of clients tell me that they use it.
Amazing. Thank you very much. And lastly, what is one piece of advice about being healthy that you would like to share?
I think the main piece of advice I'd like to share is to take a moment for one to look at their lives and look and see the areas where they feel like there's disharmony of some description. So whether that's a disharmony in their own body, so it might be that they repeatedly have reflux, but they just think, oh, just take an antacid for it and that'll be fine,
yeah,
and it'll go away. I would encourage people to seek a little bit deeper and maybe seek to find out what is it underlying that is maybe causing that dysregulation and try to find a solution for it.
Okay. Well, thank you. Absolutely thank you for all of that insightful information and stuff that I was very unsure, or I didn't know about all of it. So it's amazing. Thank you very much. Anne, where can we find you on social media? Do you have a website?
Yeah, so my website is eatandbreathe.com and my Instagram handle is Anne Higham, H-E-I-G-H-A-M. And you can find me there, and I regularly share. This is my absolute passion, my absolute joy. It's why I've done it for 25 years solidly now, all day, every day. So I like to share and do what I can.
Amazing. Well, thank you so much. You have a great rest of your day and rest of your week, and I'll speak to you soon.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. You take care. Bye-bye. Right, guys, now it's time for some of your fitness questions. And if you want to get involved, you can DM us at WhatTheHealthShow on Instagram, and you can potentially have your answers or your questions answered. Pam asks, is using the Smith machine worth it? Right now I'm having to use it for bench and squat, and I'm really enjoying it, but I've seen a lot of negative stuff about it. Pam, the fact that you're going to the gym and you are using something is better than not. So already the fact that you're going and you're using the Smith machine is so much better than not. Now, there is an element of stability that gets taken out of it. Well, a lot of stability gets taken out of it. So it's a very axial movement. So it just goes up and down, which is great for load, but it's not great for potentially technique and working, you know, stabilizing muscles. So if I were you, I would use it for volume purposes, but I would also go and learn how to squat with a bar. So I would back squat, I would goblet squat, I would split squat, I would look at doing all variations of a squat, and then the same with a bench. I would use a bar, and I would also use dumbbells, and I would also use plates. They would be my biggest suggestion for you. Hopefully that helps. Molly asks, what is the difference in terms of muscle recovery lying in bed awake versus actually being asleep? Now, the molecular difference, I do not know, but all I know is that 8 hours of sleep is so much more beneficial for you, reducing your stress levels, aiding with your recovery levels. So these are all super, super important. So yeah, in regards to your question, being asleep is 100% better for you. And guys, that's it from us today. I want to thank our guests for their time. Massive thank you to Rachel, Marvin, Jonathan and Anne for joining us today on What the Health. Just a reminder, you can download the app each week and follow us on social media. We are What the Health Show on Instagram. If you want help with your health and fitness goals, I provide a top tier coaching service, which is a no BS problem solving, and I hold your hand every step of the way. If this is of interest to you, please reach out at gb.fitness.health, or if not, at George Burt. Also, the show is available to listen back to on all good podcasting platforms. Thank you very much. I'm back next week at 11. I'm George. Thanks for listening. Have a great day. Goodbye.
FUBAR Radio.